Turning particularly wet across Northern Ireland during Wednesday, England and Wales seeing some rain for a time, but late in the day before it reaches Scotland. But behind that band of rain, we're going to see much warmer air spreading in across many parts of the UK for Thursday. So England and Wales seeing temperatures back up into the mid to high 20s and possibly even reaching 30 degrees somewhere in the southeast as southerly winds blow that warm air in all the way from southern Europe. And then towards the end of the week into the weekend, I think most areas becoming somewhat drier, brighter, and a little warmer too. So after this slight hiatus with the cooler, wetter weather, looks like something more like summer should return for most of us towards the end of the week. That's the forecast. Now back to Jim Lee.
Sounds all right. Thank you very much, Peter. Now on Radio 4, our new book of the week, The Pink Sari Revolution by Amana Fontanella Khan. Sampat Devi was raised in India's notoriously corrupt Uttar Pradesh region. Married off at 12 and essentially illiterate, she has nevertheless risen to become the commander-in-chief of a 20,000-strong women's vigilante group fighting for women's rights across India. Meera Sayal is the reader.
Dawn on an otherwise quiet morning in the town of Attara, in the backyard of the feared state legislator Purushottam Dwivedi, Achilal Nishad was writhing over the licking tongues of a fire. Two beefy men were dangling the wiry farmer over the flames, while a third was slapping him around the head and punching him in the ribs. He had received a phone call summoning him around 4 o'clock that morning on December the 13th, 2010. He knew that bad news awaited him.
"Wake up, bastard! Your daughter has stolen from the legislator and run away. You come here right now, or we'll drag you out of bed ourselves."
It was one of the politician's men. It had only been 5 days since his daughter, Shilu, had gone to live at Dwivedi's, the legislator's house. Officially, the arrangement was that she was to be his maid, but Achi had felt uneasy about it since the beginning.
"Your daughter is a thief, huh? Is that why you left her at the legislator's house?"
one of the muscle men bellowed as Achi squirmed over the flames. "It wasn't my idea. He said she should come here," he whimpered.
"And was it his idea for her to rob him also? You have a hand in this. You told her to steal."
No, I didn't. Come see my house,"
Achi cried out in desperation. They dragged him off to his house where they turned the place upside down but found nothing. Then they bundled him and his young son into the car and delivered them to the police station.
"Lock up these dogs," the men told the officers there. "They have dared to steal from us."
Though they hadn't been charged, they would later claim that they were thrown in a cell by the obliging police officers. Finally, after several anguished hours, the men came back.
"Okay, you can let them out now," they ordered the police.
Father and son were informed that the men had found Shilu and were going to arrest her. When Achi asked to see her, he was threatened with another beating and ordered to go home.
"She's as good as dead anyway."
They went back home, sick with fear and at a loss about who could help them. Achi considered joining the bandits. Outlaws hid in the ravines and forests surrounding the village, attracting men who had not yet received justice through the state and have taken up arms instead. He might well have done so, had not quite unexpectedly another solution presented itself. On the morning of December the 14th, 2010, Sampath Pal rose at dawn and, unflinching in the harsh cold, grabbed the steel lever of the hand pump and filled an old paint bucket with water. She dunked a small plastic beaker into the water and poured it over her brown, goose-fleshed body. She barely noticed the biting cold. In her mind, she was digging over the details of the suspicious story that had been brought to her attention the day before. One of her district commanders, Geeta Singh, had reported that a girl was taken out of the house of Purushottam Dwivedi, a member of the Legislative Assembly in the state of Uttar Pradesh. She was seen being shoved into a police van, evidently accused of being a thief. Geeta was sure something was fishy about this. When Sampath is deep in thought, her eyes, specked with hints of gold and amber, narrow. Her feathery eyebrows plunge south, and she pokes the tip of her tongue out, resembling a child working out a demanding arithmetic calculation in her head. "None of this is true," Sumpath said to herself, rinsing the soap bubbles off her body. How could a young girl steal from a politician? Who could she be? A maid? A lover? She had good reason for being suspicious. In Uttar Pradesh, India's Wild West, more than a fourth of the elected representatives in the assembly had been charged with criminal offences. Sumpath, fired up now, rushed to get out of the house. Sampath's patio overlooks Bisunda Road, one of the main thoroughfares in Attara, a largely undeveloped town with a population of 10,700. It is enveloped on all sides by drought-prone farmland, where gaunt men wearing dhoti loincloths are silhouetted by the sun as they bend to pull weeds by hand. Every year the farmers pray for a good rainfall. When it is low, waves of suicide sweep the region. Too poor to pay back money owed for expensive insecticide when crops fail, many farmers end up, as a way out, drinking the very chemicals that plunge them into debt. Bisunda Road did not exist before Sampath's arrival here in 2005. Before, a rutted path made the axles of wooden carts jolt out of their wheels and doubled the journeying time of anyone who took it. One day in 2006, she and a group of disgruntled women had convened on the road and, with wooden hoes in their hands, proclaimed loudly, "This is road! What? Looks like a field! Come on, let's grow vegetables here, huh?" They started sowing seeds, tilling the dirt road and blocking the traffic. Passers-by stopped and stared. Sampath called the district magistrate to show him the state of things and made him make a promise in front of the crowds and the gathered local press. "Yes, Sampathji, yeah, we will fix the road, definitely." Her gang of women, who wore striking pink sari uniforms and carried pink-painted sticks, had made their first public appearance that day. The local journalists christened them the Gulabi Gang, Hindi for the Pink Gang. At the time, they numbered but a few dozen. By 2008, there would be about 20,000 members, making the gang double the size of the Irish Army and eight times larger than the estimated number of Al-Qaeda operatives in Afghanistan. "Now I am so famous," Sampath likes to say, using the imported English word and smiling, spreading her arms out wide to demonstrate the scale of her notoriety. Her office, effectively the headquarters of the Pink Gang, is on the ground floor of a two-story brick house. The front door opens onto a small roofed patio, where Sampath receives a steady trickle of men and women daily, who start arriving shortly after dawn and continue bringing their problems until nightfall. Much like patients in a doctor's waiting room, they sit on the flimsy plastic chairs with hopeful faces until they are seen. Often Sampath, whose days are filled with visits to the police station and protests outside the courts, is out when people arrive, so they have to wait. That, in fact, was the reason why Sampath, a woman in her late 40s, moved out of her family home in the nearby town of Badausa, where her husband lives with her children. Her family's domestic life was being upended by the continuous to and fro of people with tearful stories. In a place like Attara, it is highly unusual for a woman to live apart from her family, but Sampath has a way of making exceptions to the rules. She moved, together with her faithful associate, Jay Prakash Shivare, into the office in 2005 when they were both small-time social workers. They would organise self-help groups in the surrounding hamlets, a government-sponsored scheme whereby women would pool small amounts of money in order to qualify for a government loan. Over time, Sampath would transform one of her groups into what would become a vigilante organisation. Few parts of India were as badly in need of justice as their region, Bundelkhand, one of the most crime-ridden areas of Uttar Pradesh. It is one of the most populous areas of the world, with a population surpassing Brazil's. It is also one of the poorest. Food scarcity is more severe than in sub-Saharan Africa. Vast swathes of the area are widely considered, even by the government, to be lawless. Because of Sumput's strong personality and her record of helping others, it wasn't long before the women in the area started coming to her with their problems, which were plentiful. Some complained of a lack of a road. Others needed help getting pension cards, which officials were refusing to give them until they paid a bribe. Sumput started mobilising the women in the self-help group to act collectively in response to these problems. She galvanised them to march together to confront government officials, to demand better roads and bribery-free bureaucracy. In the beginning, officials would deride Sumput and her cohorts. "Ha! Just who are you?" they would ask with a sneer whenever the women showed up. But soon a simple stroke of genius would turn these women into the nightmare of corrupt officials and very quickly into the talk of the town. Sumput wanted the women to be easily identifiable in public. Maybe they can wear a badge, she thought, but quickly rejected that idea. Then she came up with the solution of them wearing the same colour sari. Like that, the women would be easily seen in a big crowd. Immediately, the many additional advantages of wearing a uniform became apparent to her. It was a way to build a strong collective identity, to symbolise their unity. Drawing inspiration from the sticks elderly women used while walking, Sumput also had everyone in her gang carry pink-painted sticks, useful if there was any trouble, and also to scare away stray dogs. She set off to a nearby city with a large fabric market to buy the saris, with the help of a local supporter. They ran their eyes over the multiple shades, blues, greens, which colour should they pick? In India, each colour is saddled with a political or religious association. Red for socialists, green for Muslims. Blue was taken by the Bajuhan Samaj Party, the lower caste. Orange by Hindus. Yellow by the Gayatri Parivar, a large religious group. Every colour seemed taken by some group or another. "We didn't want people to mistake us for someone else," Sumput recalls. That is why pink was ultimately chosen. The next morning, Sumput went around all the nearby villages where she had started self-help groups. "The saris have come," she told the women. "Tell everyone to come and get one." Why did these women, mostly middle-aged or elderly, who had never before rebelled, join Sumput's gang at this stage of their lives? Lungi Dai, one of the older women, put it this way. "Hope is a very big thing, huh? Sumput gave it to us every time she came to the village." Her best friend, Kudia Dai, added, sucking in her lips over her toothless gums, "A lot of women were joining, so I decided to go along too." On that cold December morning in 2010, Sumput, her hair still wet from her makeshift bath, went to her friendly landlord, Lakan Upadhyay, who looked up from the newspaper he was reading. "Will you read the story out to me?" Sumput had taught herself to read basic words, but news articles required an enormous effort for her to decipher. When she was a child, the boys in her village were enrolled in a small school with lessons conducted under a tree, but she and the other girls were never included. She often hid behind a bush and watched the lessons, trying to follow. After class, Sumput stalked the boys, saying to the small kids, teach me, otherwise I will beat you. And slowly, slowly, I would learn from them. Now the story was read out. "Hundreds of thousands of rupees stolen from legislator's house. It is said a girl living in the house committed the theft." The unnamed girl, who was allegedly employed as a maid, was accused of stealing 200,000 rupees, about $4,000, two mobile phones, jewellery and a rifle. "Who was the girl? Where was she from?" wrote the journalist. Sumput's landlord was an upper caste man like the legislator, so she appealed to him to try to get some more information from his contacts, and after delegating this task, she jumped up, ready to make her way out toward her mission for the day, her parting words a challenge. "A rifle? How is a girl going to walk around with a stolen rifle? Tell me."
Mira Sahel was reading from The Pink Sari Revolution by Amana Fontanella Khan. The book is abridged by Eileen Horn, produced by Clive Brill, and is a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4, where the shipping forecast is next. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Tuesday, the 30th of July. There are warnings of gales in Plymouth, Fitzroy and Seoul. The general synopsis at 1800. Low, 200 miles west of northwest Fitzroy, 1007, moving rapidly east-northeast, losing its identity by 1800 Tuesday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, west Viking, southerly 4, veering southwesterly 4 or 5, rain or showers, fog patches at first, moderate or good, occasionally very poor at first. East Viking, north at 0, south at 0, east 40s, southerly, veering westerly or southwesterly 4 or 5, occasionally 6 at first in north at 0. Thundery showers, good, occasionally moderate. West 40s, Cromarty 4.